My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
We can all get these symptoms from time to time. But if you or a loved one notice you're getting a combination of them regularly, don't ignore it. They could be signs of a brain tumour.
My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
To learn more about the common signs of a brain tumour, search Better Safe Than Tumour.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Brain Tumours, the podcast where we'll be talking to people who've been affected by a brain tumour diagnosis, either their own diagnosis or the diagnosis of a loved one. We'll also be sharing news and updates from the Brain Tumour Charity about what we're doing to halve the harm and double survival. Welcome to the podcast. Today, myself and Andy are going to be talking to Sarah and Patrick about their experiences of the chemotherapy type PCV. So welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hello.
Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Sarah. I'm 42 years old. I've always been quite healthy all my life until a couple of years ago. I started having dizzy spells. As you do, you go to the doctors to try and find out what's wrong. A few more doctor's visits, a scan, and I was told I had a primary glioma, which I didn't have a clue what was in the medical terms, but then they said it was a tumour in my insular region of my right side. And sort of from there, it was a bit of a blur. So I went straight to surgery from that onto radiotherapy. And due to the type of tumour that I have, it's cancerous. I'm actually doing some chemotherapy now. I'm going through my chemotherapy at the moment, which is PCV, chemotherapy, which you mentioned at the beginning. So that's, in a nutshell, how I'm here. No signs or symptoms for years, just the tumour had grown that big that it started pressing on places that made me start having the dizzy spells.
So you know how long they think you'd had it for?
Yeah, they said potentially it could have been in there for growing for 10, 15 years, very slowly. No signs or symptoms, no headaches, nothing, just till these dizzy spells started. Because of the size of it, because sometimes they do a biopsy first before surgery, but because of the size of mine, they said, we'll just do surgery and they'll take a bit to find out what it is sort of through the surgery. And that's when they came back to me and said that the majority of the tumour they removed was grade 2, which is classed as non-cancerous. But there was the bits that are left and it potentially could grow back more aggressive. So that's why I had the radiotherapy and I'm now going through the chemo to get rid of them little bits that are left and to hopefully prevent it coming back in the future or coming back as quick in the future.
Could you just maybe explain what chemotherapy is for people who are listening in who don't actually know what it is?
Yeah, of course. So there's lots of different types of chemotherapy. Mine is called PCV and it's I was quite shocked when I first got told about this chemotherapy because most of it's at home, which you don't expect. So for my therapy, I go one day into hospital. I have to have blood tests first to check that my blood levels are okay because chemotherapy is quite harsh on the body. So they like to check everything first, your liver, everything, to make sure you're strong enough, really, go through the chemo. So then you have an intravenous injection for about 10-15 minutes. I have an injection and then I take 5 tablets at the hospital. I have to sit there for a little while I just check I'm okay. And then I go home for 10 days taking 4 tablets a day. So a lot of people are quite, you know, they sort of think that's a very strange chemotherapy because they've never heard of people having it at home. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it's in the hospital. But and then after the 10 days, I stop, I have a break for 6 weeks and then I do what's called another cycle. And with PCV, there's a lot of food restrictions as well. It's a lot of food that you can't eat. So yeah, so it's quite a mixture of things on that one.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the chemotherapy attacks the cancerous cells, stops them dividing and repairing themselves. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. But when we talk about side effects of PCV, that's because they attack the cancerous cells, which is brilliant. but they can also sometimes attack the good cells, but that's what the side effects are. So the nausea, there's other side effects, you know, that are possible. So rashes, sickness, muscle problems, stomach problems, but it's doing good. It's getting rid of the bad cells. So some of them good cells, but the good cells do repair themselves eventually once the chemo is finished, whereas the bad cells can't, the cancerous cells can't repair themselves.
So it's really tough during the actual phases of chemo. And is that why you have several cycles of chemo? Because it takes a while to attack the cancerous cells?
No, it's so for me, I'm going to have up to 6 cycles. I think it depends on each tumour and each person, how many cycles you have. But my oncologist, who's my doctor at the cancer hospital, says I'll have up to 6. But if my body, for example, couldn't cope at 5 or 6 or 4, sorry, they would say, okay, we'll try it differently. We might knock a few tablets off, or we might change the dose, or we might not give you 6, because it's not detrimental if I don't have 6. It's just that's how many they can give me, up to 6. I'm going to try and do the 6. I want to try and do the whole 6, because it is better to get rid of those nasty cancer cells in there. But if I can't, you know, I'm not worried, because my doctor said it's only up to 6. So we just see, we keep going.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that and for explaining that so well, Sarah. I'm going to move on to Patrick, because you've also had PCV, haven't you? Do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience?
Yes. So my story is a bit longer than Sarah's, so bear with me. So my brain tumour was discovered in 2015, and basically the same as Sarah, it probably was growing for at least 10 years plus, and only came about because it got so big that it interfered with the electronic circle around your brain. So that caused me to have seizures. And so I was diagnosed in August of 2015 through having seizures. And then I had brain surgery December 2015. After the brain surgery, I was fine up until May 2017, when they told me that it was back again. So I had another brain surgery. And then I was okay up until May 2018, where they told me that actually these surgeries aren't working. The tumor starts growing back within 3 months of the surgery. So what we're going to do now is put you on radiotherapy and chemotherapy. However, I didn't start on PCV. I started on a chemotherapy called, and bear with me because I've got it written down here, tremozenomilin.
They make them such simple names, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyone listening at home, feel free to Google that. That was 6 sessions. However, it did take me a year because it was quite a harsh chemotherapy. So it's meant to be 6 sessions, but it took me from September to August to do 6 sessions because my platelets occasionally wouldn't be up to scratch. And it was every 6 weeks. And then it'd be a case of, oh, your platelets aren't very good, blah, blah, blah. So I get pushed back. And then they told me, and I had scans every 3 months, but then they told me that it hadn't worked and the tumor had grown a bit. So that's when they put me onto PCV, because that is a chemotherapy that actually works very well with brain tumors because it's designed to get through the blood-brain barrier. Try and say that 5 times fast.
That's quite good to know that they can try different sorts of chemo, that just because you have one, that there are different sorts, and that if one
exactly,
doesn't
yeah.
work, they can try a different yeah. sort.
Yeah, so radiotherapy, 2 types of chemo, 6 sessions of the PCV. However, I only managed 4 due to the fact that I already had a year of chemo, which was not great. At one point, my liver was failing at one point. I was told after the fact, like after I finished chemo, by the way, your liver was failing at one point. And I was like, great. Could have told me at the time. And then, so this one was only lasted 4. However, before the end of the 4th one, I did have it reduced to just the first things. It was first just the 5 tablets and the pills you take at home. They took away the intravenous, and then they took away the tablets you take away at home and only gave me the 5 big ones, because they're the ones that actually do the main job, I was told. But I did take them at home because that event happened during COVID. So I'd have to go into the hospital, grab the pills and run home and take them and be ill for 5 days. But overall, to be perfectly honest with you, when it came to the PCV, I actually found it way better than the previous chemo. The previous chemo was literally 2 weeks of taking one tablet a day and feeling like death the whole time. Whereas the PCV, I felt like death for 5 days. And then the rest of the time, I was actually fine. I'll take my tablets. I didn't take it 3 times a day. I only took it twice a day. And I actually went to work because I was working part-time at the time. So I'd go to work and then come home, take my pills. And I was like, it's fine. And seeing as I was working as an animal technician on hoofstock, which requires a lot of physical work, the fact that I was able to do that job while on chemotherapy, I think attests to how well it was worked for me, though. But obviously, it's not the same for everyone. I had a friend who was on PCV and he hated it. And he said, oh, I'd much prefer the tremozemolin or whatever it's called. It all depends.
When you said you felt rough for a week, how long did you then feel okay before the next cycle?
So I'd feel rough for about 5 days. And then the rest of the tablets you took at home, yeah, I would feel totally fine. And then I'd have the 6 week break. But I will say that the PCV, I only managed 4 sessions, but that did take me from September till August the following year because my blood platelets and everything else was not working. And the reason why they stopped it at 4 was because I had a bone marrow failure. Well, the beginnings of it anyway. But yeah, it's just a case of kept being pushed back. And then, yeah, like my blood platelet level was about 10 at one point, and an ideal healthy person's roughly meant to be 19 and above, I think. I may be wrong on that one, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, so that's my long-winded explanation.
You were actually able to carry on working, because that might be surprising to people. That's surprising to me as well, because I just assumed when you're on chemo, you're kind of, I don't know, not quite bedridden, but you're struggling all the time. But it sounds like you have a rough week or so. I know everyone's different. Rough week, and then you'll have maybe a month or so where you actually can function relatively okay.
Yeah, well, that's it. So previous chemo, I was dead to the world for 2 weeks, quite literally stinking up the lounge, because when you're on chemo, your body is excreting the toxins. So you went on the last chemo, I was told, Patrick, you stink, and I had to put a blanket on the sofa so that I didn't stink up the sofa. Yeah, so that's it. Like,
they're the things no one tells you about.
Yeah, so that's it. The PCV, yeah, it's okay. So 5 days, I felt rough, really, really ill, and really sick, and I was sick multiple times throughout those 5 days. And then twice I had to go to A&E because I had a chemosepsis.
What's chemosepsis?
Essentially, it's your body just literally going, oh no, something's happening. So it starts attacking itself for all intents and purposes. So you basically wake up, you're feeling like you want to vomit, and then it's your body attacking itself. So you have to go to A&E straight away and show them your card, and they say, oh, you have the card. They send you straight into a bay, and then they give you antibiotics.
Is that because the chemo, the body's trying to attack the chemo? Like,
pretty much, yeah. The body's just going, oh no, I don't know what to do. And like, best way I can, yeah, is you wake up with a temperature. So when you're on chemo, if your temperature is anywhere above 37.5, go to hospital straight away, because that means that your body's attacking itself.
I can actually jump in a little bit there, Patrick, because that happened to me on my third cycle, which was only, yeah, a couple of weeks ago. And I had a temperature, I didn't feel very generally well. Went to the Christie and they kept me in for a couple of nights just to monitor me, really, checked for infection. There was no infection, because that's the concern. It was just that my blood levels were down. So they just monitored me for a couple of days just to check that everything was okay. But there is a misconception about working and things with chemotherapy, because it's not always to do with how well you feel about working. It's to protect you and also to protect others, because you're not just protecting yourself from catching COVID, the flu, things like that. You've also got to protect other people, because like chemo tablets, things like that can be poisonous to other people, because it is a poison, basically, that you're putting into your body. So a lot of people think you can't work, but as long as my oncologist said to me, if I feel comfortable and I keep myself safe, and even if I worked from home and I felt up to it, there was no reason why I couldn't. So
I think for some people that's quite important, because Somebody once said to me, I'm going stir crazy if I'm sitting at home just thinking about this all the time. All I'm doing is overthinking, whereas work gives me a distraction. So knowing you can work if you are the sort of person that's going to overthink and do your own head in, effectively, just sitting on the sofa. Because some people might enjoy it, you know, having a bit of time off work. But for some people, that's an opportunity for the mind just to...
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
It's good at first, don't get me wrong. It is nice to sit watching telly, but I'm not currently at work, but I'm in talks now with my work about how we're going to do it and, you know, phased returns, things like that. So, and I can't wait. I'm bored to death at home every day.
Yeah.
And like you say, your mind can play tricks when you sat at home because you start thinking about things that you won't really think about if you're working. So I'm just hoping when I go to the hospital on Wednesday, because I start my fourth cycle, that my doctor says, if you feel well enough, you know, when you feel well enough, do a couple of hours or do 10 hours, you know.
Is there a risk, though, of catching infections? Do you have to be super careful? Because presumably yes. You're on chemo. If you catch a cold or, heaven forbid, COVID, would it have a more of an effect?
Yeah, so basically, for anyone listening out there, because it has been all very catching things and being poorly, the doctors will always give you worst case symptoms just in case. So please don't worry, because you won't always get the worst case symptoms. But they do say that some normal infections that you'd get if you weren't on chemo can be life threatening if you got them on chemo. But again, they'll always tell you that because it's the worst case scenario. My oncologist said to me, you can go out still. You can still go on the bus. It's a bit like COVID, really. Wear a mask, take your antibac gel with you, wash your hands a lot. You know, so it's all the same kind of stuff. Don't let anyone in the house who's got a cold, who might be have coughing a lot, having symptoms, you know, of things. So it's quite difficult for me because I've got a 10-year-old child who goes to school. So,
and they do like to share germs, don't they?
Yes, they do. So I'm always like, how are you feeling this morning? And he's like, I'm okay. I'm like, good. But for me, I got quite obsessed with it at the beginning. I was constantly like washing my hands. My hands were sore from just washing them all the time. You know, just worrying about it. And then my doctor said, don't. He says, just protect yourself when you're out and about. Go out and enjoy yourself. Just be careful.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I don't know if it's the fact that I'm a bit younger. Like when I got diagnosed, I was 23. So when I started chemo, I was 26. It's just a case of like, they say, oh, be careful, he said, don't get a cold because it can be life-threatening. And I did actually get a cold a couple of times, and actually wasn't that bad.
It's more about preventing the chemo then, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. It just meant I couldn't have chemo, and that the side effects of having a cold were worse than it would be for a normal person. But that's about it, really. But yeah, it's just in case you're 26, he's like, yeah, I'm going to go and live out life when I can. And then you're on a tube in London, and it's like, oh, well, cold, great.
Worst place for lots of people.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Can you have alcohol on chemo, or does it literally take two sips of lager when you get drunk?
Long story short, no. Because when I was on my first lot of chemo, I'm not going to lie, I was really depressed and very upset and all the rest of it, like a normal person would be if you're told that you're on chemotherapy. And my doctor never said, don't drink. They said, oh, you imply that you shouldn't drink. It's the best thing not to. But obviously, I'm in a bad headspace already. And the way I've coped with it is drinking. And that was actually one of the things that led to me almost having liver failure, is the fact that I was drinking. Like, you should, rule of thumb, do not have any alcohol when you're on chemotherapy. Because even when you're on PCV, you can't even have non-alcoholic alcohol, a beer or whatever, because that's one of the dietary violations, for lack of a better word. But I did find a really nice non-alcoholic beer, though, the Brooklyn Lager non-alcoholic beer. So if you're desperate for that beery taste, it's always a good shout.
You mentioned then about the dietary requirements. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because that sounds like it would have almost as much of an impact as the chemo in some senses.
Well, I don't know about Sarah. I can't speak for her, obviously. But for me, initially, you're just like, oh, my God, what can I eat? What can't I eat? Basically, for me, like, you can't have anything aged, like cheese, yogurt, dry-aged steak or whatever. And initially, I found it quite hard to begin with because you can't put beef stock in your bolognese or whatever you like doing. But after a while, perfect answer, I found it quite easy.
Can they explain why that's the case? I'm just curious.
It just reacts with the PCV, that's what I was told.
There's an ingredient in the chemo I can't pronounce it. It begins with a T, Tangine or Teen, something like that.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And it's also in the certain foods as well as the chemo. So if you have too much of it, it can cause problems. That's why they say don't have it. Alcohol is a standard with anything. But again, my doctor said to me, don't drink while you're on the chemo, but in the 6 week break, if you fancy a couple of glasses of wine, then feel free. Everything within moderation.
Yeah, I was told the opposite.
Because I was the same. I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to eat all my favourite foods and all this. Then when I actually thought about it, it was like pickled herring and things like that. So I don't like fish anyway. So it's not a massive now. And sometimes when you feel a bit sick on the chemo, I tend to just eat toast or something that's just easy and, you know, because you just can't be bothered cooking for one meal anyway. So at first it was like hard work, but now I'm sort of getting used to what I can and can't eat and it just becomes sort of natural to you in the end.
Are you told that when you start, or do you have to discover that yourself?
No, I was given a leaflet with everything on, names, what I can and can't eat, what side effects I could expect, you know, what I could get. You're given numbers for anyone that will be at the Christie Hospital. That's where I am. You know, you're given a hotline number, so you can always ring that for any questions. It's always doctors, nurses at the end. They'll answer any questions you have, or if there's any problems, they'll tell you to, you know, to go to A&E or come there, or so that they do inform you very well.
What happens if, say, you went to your friend's house and they cooked a spag bowl and it had a bit of beef stock in it? Would
cheese on top?
Yeah. What would happen?
Well, my nurse basically scared me half to death. So when she was talking to me about everything, she said, I had this woman once and she didn't listen to the rules and she was very, very ill with an extremely painful headache, which is not what you want anyway. So that sort of made me think, I'm never going to not listen to the rules. But because my husband actually asked the nurse the same question, because we had something in the fridge that night, chicken in white wine sauce. And he said, well, what about things that are in alcohol and things that are... And she said, again, just try it. She said, you might be fine with it. If it's a little bit, you might be okay. But if you're not, then you know not to eat it next time. So it's because you don't always know what's in food.
Well, that's it. And that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, are they going to stop your treatment? Does that mean they can't do the next round of treatment if you ate something on the naughty list?
No, I think it's just more about how it would make you quite ill, I think.
Nauseous ill or just generally ill?
Well, I've not had anything yet that doesn't agree with me, so I can't say how it'd make me feel, but my nurse told me that it was a really bad headache for this girl that didn't listen to the rules. So I suppose it depends on each person sort of what side effect they'd get, but yeah, fingers crossed up to now food's not been an issue as such for me.
Yeah, well, in my case, I was silly enough to eat things.
There's always going to be one, Patrick.
I've seen, like, there are a couple ones which are accidental. Like, we bought steak from the supermarket and had it, but it never said on any of the packaging it was dry aged, which is what is one thing you're not meant to eat. So I'd eat it, going, and you're like, nom, I love steak. But to be honest with you, for me, it was mainly just like really bad dietary issues. So I wouldn't have diarrhea or anything, but to be fair, I would have really welcomed that at that time of my life. It's just a case of like really bad indigestion. Like your stomach just feels really bad and you're just burping a lot. So like I found out with steak, and weirdly, peanut butter cup Ben and Jerry's, which you wouldn't have thought. Like, it took me a long time to work it out though, because it'd be a case of like when you're on chemotherapy, they give you steroids and that gives you the munchies. And I really like that flavor of Ben and Jerry's. Wouldn't have it now because I refuse to pay £5 for a tub, but it's just a case of, yeah, I was just like, well, why do I feel so ill afterwards? And then I was like, it's finally kicked in about maybe 4 months later. I was like, oh, that's probably the reason why.
So do you have steroids as a matter of course, just talking about that? Because I know from personal experience of being on steroids can lead to other issues about, you know, not being able to sleep very well and munchies and all those interesting things.
I think it's different for everyone. But for me, I was taking steroids because I suffered really badly with sickness. Like, for me, nothing helped in terms of anti-sickness tablets. So I just took them in the hope they would work. They didn't work, and then I became constipated. So it's just a case of, like, I just taking them in hope. But one of them was steroids, which was one of the more effective ones to help with the situation. So that's the reason why I was on steroids. But otherwise, I don't think I would have been on steroids. But I think if something was to happen, something went wrong, or they would put me on steroids. But I think it's different. I think Sarah can explain it better than I can.
So for me, I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with steroids. After my operation, obviously, I came out of hospital and I was on steroids because it helps. Steroids basically help with inflammation. And obviously, there was inflammation on the brain after the op. So they were brilliant for that. Yes, you do eat a lot, but, you know, they helped with the head not hurting. And I came off them straight after my operation. And I managed to stay off them until a couple of months, until I started my radiotherapy. When I started radiotherapy, I started having sleeping issues with my head. So not being able to get comfortable, my head felt a bit strange and I'd not had that before. So that's when they put me back on steroids to help with that. So I was on steroids through my radiation, which was 6 weeks, Monday to Friday. And then after that, they decided they wanted to wean me off them because I didn't want to be on steroids forever because they do have good effects and they do have bad effects as well. So they weaned me off the steroids and everything was going great. They put me back on them then because there was some other problem with my head. My head felt again a bit tender. So they put me back on them again and they kept me on them for my first two rounds of chemo because they don't like to change anything until you've had your chemo to see how you react. And again, I was weaned off the steroids. So that was great. But then as soon as I went into hospital for my third cycle, they put me back on steroids. So I think it just depends on each, like Patrick says, each circumstance. I obviously needed them more for my head for whatever reason. But I'm now weaned off them again and hoping that's it now till after chemo, but we shall see. But yeah, it is. It's not a cut. It's not like we're going to put you on steroids for chemo. I think it just depends on each sort of individual, how they react to it, whether they need it or.
Exactly. I wouldn't have been put on steroids if it wasn't for the wasn't for the sickness. So,
yeah. One of the things that I think in terms of doing an episode on chemotherapy is one of the questions that everybody talks about is what happens to your hair.
That's interesting. So when I went on radiotherapy, I obviously lost the hair where all the lasers were going in. But I don't know about Sarah. Like Sarah said, how she had issues with radiotherapy. I'm not gonna lie, I sailed through it. The only issue I had was fatigue, but it would be the case I'd be sitting there watching TV and then like just stroke my hair and say, oh, look, it's a massive clump. And it's placed on the side and then so on and so forth. So I went bald or very thin where the lasers came through. I took my hair roughly about 6 to 8 months in those areas to recover. I still currently actually have two bald spots in the back of my head, but the chemo, my experience, PCV and my previous one, all they did was just thin out the hair where the radiotherapy damaged it, pretty much it for me, but different for everyone. Like there's a person I know from the hospital, he had radiotherapy and he's been on chemo and his hair just hasn't grown back because he shaved it all off.
People automatically think chemo, you're automatically going to lose your hair.
Well, yeah, so I didn't lose my hair. So many people tell me when I was on chemotherapy, said, Patrick, we wouldn't know you were on treatment if you didn't tell us.
About the beard, if you don't mind me asking, because that would be interesting. Did that thin out as well?
No, it's very weird. Like pre my diagnosis, I didn't really have much of a beard, to be honest with you. And then suddenly it just appeared out of nowhere because I was really depressed. Between the diagnosis and the surgery, it just came about because I just didn't shave. And that's like, so that's it. I had no lasers going through my jaw, so it's fine. So for all the men out there, grow out your beard now.
For me, and for all, I'll do the women's version since you've done the men's, Patrick. Again, hair on my head, I lost all mine through radiotherapy. It wasn't chemotherapy, but I did prepare myself. I was quite patchy, still am to a point, but it is growing back. And I thought after radio, I thought, I wish I'd have had this podcast then because I just thought I'm going to lose all my hair when I have chemo. I might as well shave it off. So I did Brave the Shave and I just shaved it all off, went and got a free voucher from the Christie for a wig and just thought if I'm going to lose my hair, I'm going to have a wig. But to my surprise, I've not really lost any hair through the chemo. It's all started to grow back now. But Bodily hair is a different matter. So when I started chemo, I lost all my eyelashes on my right eye, just on my right eye, not my left eye. It's starting to go back now. I've noticed I don't have to shave my legs as much and under my arms as much because the growth of the hair is just so slow now. So there is some benefits to it not having to shave. But yeah, I thought I was going to lose all my hair I was just like, I've got no eyelashes. I didn't even notice, to be honest. It's quite funny because I was just looking in the mirror one day and I was like, got no eyelashes. They weren't coming out in clumps, like Patrick said. It was just coming off in bed at night and stuff, so it's not something you notice until you look in the mirror.
That's true.
So losing all your hair is a misconception. You don't always lose your hair with chemo. I like say mine was radiotherapy that caused mine to come out, but bodily hair, yeah, so you don't have to shave your legs as much, ladies, but it's a lot easier.
Or men who like to shave their legs.
Yeah,
yes, of course. Men as well.
For me, the only issue I would say, if any man who's having a receding hairline, it may possibly make it worse. That's what happened with me, because part of the lasers were going through the front of my head. So it's just made my receding hairline recede faster. And I don't have the confidence to shave all short because of the two brain surgeries. I call it a valley for where the surgery, a guy cut open my head. So it's just a case, it's very obvious once you shave your hair off.
I was just gonna ask, is there any, what you just said then about it's interesting, is there anything else you think someone listening to this who maybe hasn't been through chemo, any trick, not tricks is the wrong word, but anything you think, oh, you wish you'd known when you started, or something that's actually surprised you?
I personally wish that someone told me that you need to get a really good strong laxative. That's my personal takeaway, because I was on so many anti-sickness tablets, the constipation was very strong. And I did have to go into the hospital, say, mate, I feel super sick. Can you give me a drug to make this better? Because when I went to A&E for my chemosepsis, they gave me this wonderful drug called, he says while reading it, Ondansetron, which was given to me intravenously, which made the sickness go away instantly. I kid you not. Like, I'd go into A&E with all my blood capillaries in my face burst because of how violent the vomiting would be, and then I'd have that, and then within half an hour I'd look way better, and the nurses would come in and say, wow, you look way better now, Patrick. I was like, so how crap did I look before then?
And I have heard about people having severe constipation. Chemotherapy can do that. I have heard other people really struggle with that.
Yeah, the thing is, every time I went in, I'd have doctors telling me, Patrick, you're feeling sick because you're constipated, because they've x-rayed me and they see that my stools were packed to the rafters. And I'm just like, I know this, but you give me something called Axido, which is a orange-flavoured powder. And again, due to the sickness, I hated the taste. I physically could not drink it or keep it down because I'd literally just throw it back up again. And it was like a good... let's say 5 months, I can't remember what it actually was, it wasn't even into the first chemo, it was PCV chemo. So I had a whole year of being constipated, and then the PCV, eventually my had a junior oncologist tell me, actually, there's this syrup stuff, do you want to give it a go? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not, what have I got to lose? And that was great. You stuck in a bit of squash, done and dusted.
Really?
And yeah, literally, it was case. Yeah, so I'd have it in the mornings, and then I'd go in the evenings. And I'm not gonna lie, at the beginning, I put way too much in, so it was a bit violent. It's a pre-warning. It's a case of once it hits, go to the toilet there and then run for it.
I suppose after you're having constipation for a year, you probably thought it's probably not gonna work.
Yeah, so that's it. Like, people complain to me like an hour, and it's, oh man, I had a curry and I went drinking afterwards, and now I've been on the toilet all day. I'm just like, mate, you're lucky. It's a great feeling. What are you talking about?
Nothing, yeah.
Sarah, if you want to bring the conversation a bit up.
For me, I mean, as you know, the Brain Tumor Show, we just have a lovely support group on Facebook. Most of your listeners probably are on it. I joined that. So I knew a lot already about, because people had experienced it just, and I hadn't. I was the person that didn't really know what, and they sort of explained a lot and told me a lot about what to expect. So I had a rough idea of what I was expecting. One thing I would have liked to have known, because it shocked me more than anything, is when you go into a chemo ward, is how many people and chairs are just lined up full of people having chemo. And I was just a bit shocked. You know, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting a room on my own or, you know, a couple of people on a ward. But you can actually go into a room and there could be 60 people just sat in chairs, all having chemo and different types of, you know, cancer. So it's not just brain tumours, it was breast cancer. You start getting talking to these people. I was just so shocked. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I wasn't prepared for that. You know, I wasn't. But like you say, I got a lot of advice from people, don't Google anything, because Google doesn't always do justice for things. It's always a negative rather than a positive. But I do have to say, and I would advise it, if there is anyone out there who is new to this journey, or get on that support group, because I've learned a lot from people that have been through it before me. So, and now I'm in this position where I'm giving advice and helping them, that new people that are coming on again. So
yeah, because it's its own world, isn't it? The cancer world and brain tumours, it's its own world with its own language and its own challenges.
And I'm not disrespecting any cancer, but you find when you meet people, they're all very aware of breast cancer and other cancers. But when it comes to brain tumours, they're so interested in your story, because it's a different kind of world, if you know what I mean. It's very different compared to other cancers. And but this group, you know, it's amazing. I learned loads. I was like, if I felt sick one night, because obviously once you get a brain tumor, you blame everything on the brain tumor. Everything gets blamed on that, whether it's that or not. And at the beginning, I was like, I feel like this. Has anyone else had this? You know, and people were like, yeah, I've had that, but check with your medical team. You know, and just generally people that understand. So that would be my one bit of advice. Just be prepared for how many people are actually having chemo if you have to go into hospital. Depends on different hospitals as well, I think. But and use that group if you need to.
Yeah, that's it. Because I go to Royal Surrey Hospital because initially I went to St George's and they're linked to Royal Surrey, so I went there because it's a lot closer due to the fact that radiotherapy is every day for 6 weeks. And so I went there, and I was very lucky in the respect of their cancer unit has a group called TYAC, Young Adults with Cancer, basically. And I actually went to their unit for my intravenous treatment because they asked people around. They said that young people didn't particularly like going to that route, the room with all the people, because they felt like they were so much younger than everyone else. And they like having their own space. And this charity is excellent because they provide events for the young people, and in their units they have rooms where you can sleep off the chemo, you can watch TV while you're having the chemo, all that sort of thing. So, and obviously you're all young, so you can all learn off each other, and it's just great. Like if your hostel has that sort of thing, it may be worth looking into it, because I personally found it of great comfort and help, and especially as it's a case of you do have your chemo with other young people.
Certainly worth asking for that. If you're new to this, then that's really good advice from both of you about where you can go for support with people that understand what you're going through.
Exactly, yeah.
I'd recommend Maggie's centres as well. Maggie's centres are a centre. There's quite a few across the UK where you can go and do workshops, talk to other people. And obviously Macmillan, they're also the people to speak to. You know, there's lots of I was actually surprised how much help was out there, you know, because you don't go through it, you don't every day, you don't. And then when I found out I had cancer, it was like, oh, but there's so much out there to support everybody that's got cancer. It's overwhelming, really. It really is.
The only downside is that you have to go out looking, because when I first started my chemotherapy, I had an oncologist who I don't know how to describe him without saying naughty words. Let's just say moody gits. Let's call him that. He knew nothing. Like, he said to me, like, oh, Patrick, I don't see why you can't drive. I'm just like, and then I said, I'd tell him that actually, no, I can't drive because of X, Y, and Z. But he didn't know that, and he knew nothing. I had to go and find out all this stuff on my own. Apart from the young person's group, they actually came and found me. But That's the thing. Like, I'm very lucky. I have my mum, who's part of every group under the sun and probably knows more than most oncologists about brain tumours. So I was very lucky in that respect. But it can be, and I think it all depends, to be honest with you. If you have a moody old git like my first oncologist, then it's a bit difficult. But I personally would say that maybe talk to the nurses, because they seem to know a lot more than the oncologist most of the time anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's such a good point, because when you're going through this, you're overwhelmed enough as it is. You've just been told you've got a brain tumour. It's important that you are told where to go for help, that you shouldn't have to go and dig it out yourself, because you're not in the right mindset.
No, you're not, no.
No. And for anyone just starting out, they should give you details for a nurse, your own sort of nurse. I know when I first was diagnosed, I got about six lots of numbers for nurses. I had six Macmillan nurses that I could contact if I needed to, and they were there to help. And they don't just help with, you know, what to expect. They help with finances. They help with everything. So, you know, well worth getting in there and speaking to them and getting to know them, because they'll, you know, they will help you to get your driving license back when you need to, things like that. So it's well worth getting the support, even at the time when you don't feel like you want anything. But, you know, trust me, as you go in, you'll be so grateful of these people.
Yeah. And while I'm meant to add on to your point, Sarah, I've heard a lot of stories. At my hospital, they had actual occupational therapists who actually specialised in treatment and people to help them get back to work. That's always something you can look into, because I've heard so many stories, including myself, to be honest with you, where employers are just like, here you have cancer or brain tumor or whatever. Like, for example, me, I technically don't have cancer. I have a grade 2 astrocytoma type 0.2 or something like that, which is just, it's not cancerous. However, it's obviously still causes a lot of damage. But as soon as the employers hear about that, they're like, no, go away. I don't want to deal with you. Whereas if you have a occupational therapist who actually breaks it down for them, it can be so helpful.
Yeah, it's amazing how many employers don't support. But I'm very lucky. I've got a very good employer. So again, use them for you can use them for everything. They'll help you with anything.
They will, yeah.
It's horrible when you first find out, and it's scary. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, and the chemo, the radio, if you have that. But you get through it, and you can still enjoy your life. So to anyone that's just starting out, you know, get the help, get the support, and go out there and enjoy yourself. I know it's hard. Try not to let it ruin anything, because, you know, you'll get there, like me and Patrick. You know, we're getting there. So get out there and carry on and just do the best you can.
Yeah. One bit of advice I would have that worked for me personally: exercise is great for your mental health if you do feel up to it. Because I know that pre-COVID, I managed to get a membership in my local gym run by that was in partnership with the council for £20 a month. So I would just go there like 2-3 times a week and just exercise, because first things first, got me out of the house, which is great. Like, and it was a great routine. And for me, I find routine is key for making myself feel better and my mental health. But
were you able to exercise with, because I think that, again, that's another thing I think.
I say, if you can feel up to it, it does depend. Because like for me, it was a gym. I had my circuit. I was there for an hour. I didn't stretch and overstrenuate myself. Yeah, I probably didn't eat enough to sustain doing the exercise, because I did end up getting down to about 81 kilograms, which for my height of being 6'2" is not great. But if you can do it, I'd recommend doing it, because I personally found it of great help, because I am an active person by nature. I look after animals. Whilst working my old job, I was pushing 20 kilograms of poo in a wheelbarrow up a 30 degree hill every day. And now currently work for a dog charity. And yeah, that's basically it. If you can do it, I'd recommend it. I know it's worked for other people.
Yeah, it's a balance between your mental health and physical health, because you're right, it can make a big difference on your mental health if you're able to do it. And it's just about knowing your limits, isn't it? And knowing that you might not be able to go as hard as you could pre-treatment. You might have to scale it back, but accepting that the limitations about just doing it safely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I do bouldering at the moment. That's my main source of exercise, and I absolutely love it because it's a mental puzzle trying to do it. But perfectly honest, I would not recommend it if you're on chemo, because I come away from it, it's like it's literally like a 30-second boost of energy, but I come away from it lightheaded. So don't do that. But
well, it doesn't even have to be exercise, like going to the gym and things like that. You know, yeah. Just cleaning your house or moving about or
getting out for a walk, I suppose. Is
going for a walk. Well, yeah. I mean, to be honest, I never liked exercise before I got the brain tumor. Never mind the joke. But just doing little things like that. But one more piece of advice is always listen to your body. That was somebody gave me that advice.
Yeah.
Listen to your body. If it's telling you you're tired, don't worry that you're having 6 naps a day, or you know, just listen to your body and do what it's telling you, because it knows best. And if you you know, some people panic, why am I sleeping so much? Because basically your body's telling you need to, and sleep's the best thing for recovery. So just listen to it, and if it's telling you not to do something, don't worry if you can't do something. Just one step at a time, that's the best way.
Yeah, agreed. 100%.
Yeah, good piece of advice there, Sarah.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys very much for coming. It's been amazing.
Yes, guys. Hopefully. No,
thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for inviting us. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like more information, you can visit our website at thebraintumorcharity.org or email our support team at support@thebraintumorcharity.org. And finally, before you go, if you enjoyed this podcast, please can you leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, so we can reach more people and raise more awareness.
I'm Tamsin, and I work in the individual giving team at the Brain Tumour Charity. Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you or a loved one have been diagnosed with a brain tumour and are worried about your finances, the Brain Tumour Charity's Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, run in partnership with Citizens Advice, is here to help you. Our expert advisors can help you access the financial support you're entitled to, as well as give advice on how to make the most of your money. To make an appointment with our Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, visit our website at thebraintumorcharity.org/money or call our support team on 0808 800 0004.